following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome back to Hardwood Homies. I'm your host, Jackson Hoy, and today I'm joined by Cesar Smokowski. Cesar, how's it going, man?
Man, everything's wonderful over here. We're so close to the draft, just a few days away, so I can feel it in my bones. We're finally approaching the exciting day, and we've got a lot to talk about now that we're headed into the final stretch.
Yeah, less than 72 hours away for us. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. Whenever you're listening, the draft is soon. Draft is Thursday night, 7 o'clock Eastern is when it begins. And man, I am so pumped. I cannot wait for it to get there. We've been doing this a whole year of prep for this, and it's finally coming around. So this is going to be a whole ton of fun. Just in case everyone missed it, a couple episodes ago, we announced that Cesar was going to be heading off as co-host after the draft. So this is Cesar's last episode. Cesar, just wanted to say thank you on the show for the all the episodes you've done, the co-hosting you've done, all the flair you've brought, the UNC pride, all that sort of stuff. It's been a really fun ride getting to co-host with you over the past 70 or so episodes. Had a great time. Thank you, man.
Yeah, man. It's been an exciting thing to build this podcast and be able to co-found and be able to, you know, build it to where it is now. And I'm excited to see where it can go from here, and it will have a long, prosperous future.
Yeah, for sure. So what we're doing today is we're just going through positional rankings as a way to sort of wrap things up before the draft and tell people, you know, what do we think the best guys at every spot are. You know, if your team's looking for a certain position, who are the guys your team should be looking at? And so the way we did this, the way we broke it down is we used five positional classifications, the ones that I've kind of come to adopt, used by cleaning the glass, which I really enjoy those positional classifications. You've got points, which are your strict point guard types, combos, which are your combo guard types, guys who play the two and the one, wings, which is really the 2-3 combo types. Maybe you get some 3-4s in there. It's kind of ambiguous, but it's mostly guys who play the three and then mix in some two. And then you have forwards, which is like a 3-4 or 4-3 type of guy. And then lastly, you have bigs, which are primarily fives who can also play the four sometimes. I just like this classification because it accounts for the fact that a lot of these guys are going to play two positions in, maybe even three, and it's going to be different depending on where they go. So I appreciate using these. And the other thing, the reason that we want to do this is, you know, there's all these mock drafts coming around this time of year, right? Everyone wants to hear what their team is going to do. But the thing is, we're not really intel-based on here at all. There's some stuff that I hear, but it's not, I don't have enough intel to build a whole mock draft or anything, so go to one of, you know, ESPN or Sports Illustrated or whoever that is actually hearing from the teams if you want a mock draft. Us, we're going to give you our rankings, what we think. I guess these are my rankings. Cesar's going to challenge them. The reason we're doing my rankings as well is we're recording this Tuesday morning. I submitted my final big board to the Stepien last night, and my piece about it should be up either sometime today or Wednesday morning, depending on when you're listening to this. So it's probably already up on the Stepien, so definitely go check that out. It's very long, but I wrote up for each of my top 100 prospects at least a little bit of a profile for them. So we're going to go through these by position based on the guys in my top 100. And yeah, Cesar, do you want to start with the point guards?
Yeah, well, we're starting off with the point guards. And just to go through the list really quick, we have Trae Young, number one, of course. Elie Okobo, number two. Colin Sexton, number three. Number four, Jalen Brunson. Javon Carter, Trayvon Duval, Aaron Holiday, Daryl McComb, Devontae Graham, and then Jordan McLaughlin. So that's our list, and it's a pretty solid list. The first question I had is, we pretty much see Trae Young as the consensus number one point guard in this class. We obviously know how great he was at Oklahoma. But my question is, with the second player on our list, Eli Okobo, there's an understandable take that you could put him above Colin Sexton. But the interesting thing is, teams picking in the lottery, you know, we understand that Eli Okobo has a very specific skill set as a point guard. You know, he's not incredibly explosive. He doesn't have elite size, but he obviously controls the game really well. How do you think he best fits with one of these lottery teams that needs a point guard of his caliber that's going to run the offense? How do you think he's going to fit in with any of the teams in the top 12?
Yeah, see, I don't think that's his range. And one thing to address before we do go, if you're listening to those rankings and you're like, where's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? We've got him in the combo guard section, so don't worry, we didn't forget about him. But with regards to Eli Okobo, I mean, I don't know that you really have to project him to one of those teams in the top 12 because that's not where he's getting drafted. You don't have to use a top 12 pick on him just because there's enough teams that are prioritizing these other players. I don't even have him 12th on my final board either. I finished with him at number 14, so I wouldn't advocate taking him that high. But I think that if you're looking more in that 15 to 20 range, there are some really intriguing fits for him. I think Milwaukee is a team that would really benefit from bringing him in. As a guy who can play on and off the ball next to Giannis and spot up for three, that's one of his best skills, is knocking down shots. His gravity as a pull-up shooter is going to be huge for them. He can defend probably the ones and the twos. I mean, he's just a really perfect fit next to Giannis because people talk about putting one of these off-ball point guards, you know, an Aaron Holiday type maybe next to him, and that's all good and fine, but Eli Okobo gives you what an Aaron Holiday type gives you, plus a little bit more. He's bigger. I think he's a better passer than Aaron Holiday, and those two differences are just really huge. I think he's just like a generally much better prospect than Aaron Holiday. He just adds, he has that pull-up shooting ability and that ability to guard ones, but then more than that too, which is really important. You always want to have more avenues of guys who can create shots and everything. So Milwaukee's a great fit. I think San Antonio's a really good fit as well if they were wanting to go the international route. DeJounte Murray is kind of an offensive point guard, but not really. But he's more of a combo guard type. Getting another guy like Eli Okobo, who's I think mostly a point guard at the NBA level, but could definitely play next to another ball handler, that's a really interesting fit. So I think anywhere in that 15, 16 to 20 range, you have some really interesting fits for him.
Yeah, well, putting him above Colin Sexton obviously would be a big drop off from where a lot of people think Colin Sexton will go. You know, people have him going top 10 and all the intrigue that surrounds him at Alabama. Now, the thing that I had a question about with Sexton is, you know, we obviously knew that he's an electric player at Alabama and had some big time games for them late in the season as they made a tournament run. But looking at him, how do you see his offense projecting, right? We say he's going to be a guy that benefits from NBA spacing. You know, that's the big conversation around him. But a guy that's not quite an elite shooter, but, you know, isn't quite the best athlete in the class. So how do you see his offense translating? You know, we know he's a decent defender, but looking at his offense, what steps do you think, how will he fit going with a team that's going to need him to be the starting point guard, drafting him pretty high?
Well, I think it's going to come down to how well he makes himself fit. I mean, a lot of his issues come down to his play style. The fact that he loves to force long pull-up twos with his weird, not very fluid pull-up jumper form. And he just doesn't really create for his teammates all that well. He didn't make his teammates at Alabama better at all this past season, and that was really disappointing because people kind of poo-pooed the talent around him, but he had a lot of really good players surrounding him on that team. I think people underrate the talent that was on that Alabama squad, and he just didn't make those guys better. He wasn't a good playmaker for others. He was mostly just a score-first guy, and I do think he's going to benefit from that NBA space. I really like his first step and his ability to get downhill. Not really an above-the-rim finisher, but he's aggressive getting to the rim. He's strong there, and I think he's a pretty good finisher at the rim, so all those things should help him as an attacker, but the rest of the game's up to him. You know, he's going to have to figure out how to iron out his shot selection, how to make sure he's hitting his teammates with the right reads on the perimeter, because no one wants a score-first point guard who can't pass as the guy who's running their offense. That's not a sustainable offensive system, especially if it's a guy like Sexton who's not really much of a three-point shooter. You know, you can live with a real score-first point guard if they're going to be super efficient and going to get you buckets like crazy, but that's not really Colin Sexton. At this point, he doesn't play a very efficient brand of basketball with the types of shots he takes. So he's going to have to improve that three-point shot or clean up his shot selection or start really hitting his teammates with the right moves. And I just don't know that he can do that. He just didn't prove that over the course of the year at Alabama. I mean, coming into the season, everyone knew that those were the issues for him. And there was a lot of people saying, oh, he'll improve at this. He looked good at the Hoop Summit. He made some strides in the All-Star circuit. And then he just reverted back to a lot of his old bad habits. And it's hard to put a whole lot of stock in him really contributing that at the NBA level if that's going to be an issue for him.
Yeah, that's very true. Sexton has certainly has some things to iron out, but we've seen, how much of a contributor he is from his time at Alabama. But now with the next two guys, it's to a pretty close race. Jalen Brunson, Jevon Carter, obviously two seasoned guys that are pretty close to me in draft stock. But going down the list will be an interesting one that I was thinking about. The comparison. What made you put Trayvon Duval over Aaron Holiday in your latest rankings? We obviously see that Aaron Holiday has a few years on Trayvon Duval, but just looking at his one season at Duke, and yeah, he probably didn't fit well in that offense. Just looking at what he was able to do and, how much he contributed, there's not much, for me to give that much confidence in drafting him over some pretty good point guards in Aaron Holiday. We obviously see the problems with shooting, but the free throw percentage as well. What gave you the confidence to put Trayvon Duval over Aaron Holiday, even with a very mediocre first year at Duke?
Well, I just think you have to kind of bet on the athletic upside and the passing vision between those two skills for Duval. I mean, he's got great size for playing the point guard position in the NBA. I don't think he's like a really advanced player who makes reads on the fly necessarily, and he's not really a pick and roll playmaker. But as a drive and kick guy who can really find teammates with some creative passes, he's got that going for him, and I think that that's a sign that maybe you could see him grow as a passer in other ways as he ages. He gets downhill pretty quickly too. I do like his first step. And, the jump shot obviously is an issue, but if he finds a way to work it out, I think that there's some definite upside for him as a point guard. Like you said, I think Duke was just a really difficult fit for him this year. He didn't have the best infrastructure around him, and I'm by no means in love with him. I have him somewhere in the mid 40s, but I just think that the reflection of him over Aaron Holiday is just kind of me saying that I don't get it with Aaron Holiday. He's now getting mocked in the top 20. He got invited to the green room, and I just completely do not understand the hype with a guy like that who's going to be a one position defender at the NBA level, probably not even an average defender because he was never an average defender in college. He was a minus. Anytime he was at UCLA, he's competitive and he fights, but that's about it on defense. He doesn't have much else. Obviously, people point to the length, but I don't know how much that's going to help him when he's just so short, as like a guy who doesn't really have very good instincts either. Offensively, yeah, he can shoot. I appreciate that, but you're drafting a guy who's like a spot up, off movement shooter guy who's 6'1". He's all right in terms of point guard instincts, but he is really inconsistent in terms of making the right reads as a passer. He turned the ball over a ton all 3 years at UCLA, and he just doesn't really have a feel for the game on either end, and that just really kind of holds me back from putting him up there. Not that Trayvon Duval is a whole lot better, at least on defense, where he was just kind of a nightmare all of last season, but at least he has the physical upside and youth on his side, whereas Holiday, already 21, and he still has a lot of these questions. He just hasn't progressed that much. So they're close for me. I have them really, really tight together on my final ranking, but I just would rather go for the upside with Duval because I don't even see what the upside of Aaron Holiday is if he hits. I don't even think there's any chance he becomes a starting point guard. So that doesn't, he just doesn't interest me.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing with Duval is you obviously look at his production in high school and you say, he was a great passer and he used his athleticism to his advantage, but really in that Duke scheme, I really worried about how they used him, just his shooting numbers, and I think that that's kind of overblown, the idea that everybody can learn to shoot. Not everybody progresses as an outside shooter at the same rate, and certainly his jump shot is something questionable. If your point guard is shooting 59% from the free throw line, that's not exactly a good sign that he's going to be able to translate to the NBA three. So that's only something that I question. But I think Trayvon Duval, a guy that you can certainly bank on the upside. He has the necessary physical tools and is a good enough pure point guard in terms of his passing vision to make an impact. But that certainly is something to look at between those two as, you know, the draft comes around. And then the last guy I wanted to talk about in this point guard section is we have a lot of interesting guys as we get further down the list. And one of the most interesting Jayhawks in the last few years is Devontae Graham. And when we're looking at his college production, you obviously say, you know, he's amongst the nation's elite point guards and also contributes on defense, which is great, unlike, you know, your Jalen Brunsons or your Trey Youngs. So what in your mind do you think is the biggest thing holding Devontae Graham back in terms of being amongst the higher ranked, the elite, you know, senior players in this draft? Why is he falling behind in the point guard ranks despite what he did in college being so illustrious?
I just think he's not that good of an athlete, and it's going to limit him inside the arc at the next level. I mean, he shot 39% on twos even last year, and he just doesn't. He's just not a finisher at the rim. He's never been a guy who gets downhill and finishes there. He's always been a shooter first, a guy who's going to pull up or spot up, and it's just not his game to get downhill. And you kind of need that from your NBA point guards. So I just think that that's not going to be a part of his game at the next level, and it could be a sign that he's just too physically limited to even really be an NBA player. I have him more like late second range. I understand some of the reasons for appeal with him. He's a really, really, really good shooter. He's going to fit in next to good players as well. I've always said that he knows how to play off of other players, and that's gonna help him. And I think he's going to turn up the intensity a little bit on defense when he doesn't have to carry so much offensive responsibility, but he's still probably a minus defender in the NBA. So he could stick around as a rotation guy. It's just that there are some other guys I'd rather have. I think let's move on to the combo guards just in the interest of time. So the rankings that we have for these guys, first I had D'Anthony Melton, second Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, third Landry Shamet, fourth Shake Milton, fifth Bruce Brown, sixth Dante DiVincenzo, seventh Anthony Simons, eighth Grayson Allen, ninth Devin Hall, and tenth Dakota Mathias. Cesar, what were some of your questions about these combo guard rankings?
Yeah, well, the combo guards certainly isn't a strength of this draft. You know, we've seen previous years where guards really stand out, but this year isn't the year for them. But the interesting thing, obviously, at the top of this list, we're looking at with D'Anthony Melton and Shai, what has caused this shift where D'Anthony Melton has really risen up your board? And, you know, he's risen up mine as well, but has it been solely on the workout footage that we've seen? Or has it been other indicators from, you know, his previous play? We didn't get to see him a whole lot this year. But what has caused this big shift where you're putting him up against, you know, a Shai, someone slotted to go in the lottery? What has caused this big tide for Melton?
Yeah, it's just me figuring out really what I value in some of these prospects. Like a guy like Zaire Smith, who I've ranked really high on my final big board. I won't give it away if you want to go figure out where I have him ranked. By reading my piece, but Melton brings a lot of the similar strengths in terms of just upside, really, where you have not necessarily traditional upside, where it's just taking a guy who's super athletic and saying, oh, he's going to figure these things out, but it's a guy who has that intersection of physical profile and basketball IQ. Melton has some of the best anticipatory instincts as a defender of any player in this draft, maybe the best anticipatory instincts as a defender of any player in this draft. He's incredible to see him just instantly make plays and just have a propensity for creating havoc on that end. It's really incredible. And I think that's like a really solid indicator of his ability. You know, if he learns to shoot, if he continues to hone his dribble, this is a guy who could be a high level point guard or shooting guard in the NBA, depending on what position you want to play him as. That's why you have him as a combo guard in here. He's just so good in terms of figuring things out quickly, reacting quickly. And it's going to come down to the jump shot, obviously. The Drew Hanlon videos certainly are encouraging, but I would really rather see it in a game setting because, you know, you can't just judge based on workout videos. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a guy who I like. I'm not going to fully jump in on the train with him just because his jump shot is, I think, further away than people want to give it credit for. I mean, he just rarely took threes at all this year for Kentucky. He basically, his shot isn't conducive to pull up off the dribble at all. That's something that's far away for him. And, you know, I like him. I think he's got a good handle, but he's not a very good athlete. His strength's a real limitation on both ends. So I think he's going to be like a really useful player, but I think people saying that like Rich Man's DeLon Wright or DeJounte Murray is like a floor comparison for him, I'm not in on that. I think that those are both really good players, and just using those as a floor for Shai is kind of giving too much credit to his athletic profile maybe. So we'll see what he ends up being. I like him a lot. I think I have him 15th on my final board, but I think that a guy like D'Anthony Melton just has more upside because that basketball IQ and athleticism combination really just popped off the charts. And you know, you need similar skill development for both him and Shea. Shea's obviously a better handler and has better size, but both those guys are going to need to improve their jump shot. So it'll be really interesting to see how that pans out for both of those guys.
Yeah, well, with Melton, the biggest questions are, where is he going to fit at the next level? I think he has a great physical profile for playing the one, but I think that he certainly needs to improve his outside shooting, as we have alluded to. But he also, I don't know if he's the elite ball handler that a lot of the other, guards slash combo guards are in this draft, but he certainly has the upside as a defender and as a two-way player, looking forward. Now, another interesting, matchup or versus comparison is our next two guys is Landry Shamet and Shake Milton. And it seemed like both of us were pretty high on Shake Milton in the beginning of the season, coming into SMU. He was a highly touted guy. What has caused the biggest, difference between Landry Shamet, a guy that, we saw at Wichita State, maybe didn't live up to the expectations of being player of the year, but, did all right in his own right. Well, how do those two guys stack up? What part of Shamet's, skill set is more impressive than Shake's? Is it the athleticism? Is it the offensive upside?
I mean, I think both those guys are really close in my mind. I flip-flopped on them a lot. I end up going with Shamet just because I think he's a better shooter off movement at the next level. O'Toden has done a really great job of highlighting this in some of their podcasts. Shamet, just one of the best off-movement shooters in this class, sprinting side to side and just getting into a shot really quickly. Milton's a guy I'm really confident in as a spot-up shooter. I have no questions about that, but he just didn't show as much off movement this past season. And Shamet, I think, has a little bit better percentages than Milton, so I'm a little bit more confident in him as a shooter, but it's really kind of a wash almost. Shamet also, I think, is probably more of a point guard type at the NBA level. I think he's got a little bit better of a first step. And, I don't know who I trust more as a passer. I think both of those guys are really great passers in terms of making the right reads, having good vision, but I might lean Shamet just a little bit. And, Milton obviously has a bit of a size advantage. I think they're both about the same height, actually, but Milton's got obviously a few inches of wingspan on Shamet, but it doesn't really show up functionally all that much. Milton's wingspan is nice. It helps him recover on defense, which he kind of needs because he's not that quick laterally, but he doesn't use it much other than that. Whereas Shamet, he has plays with a little bit shorter of arms, but he plays bigger than his size a lot of the time, and he's really technical and competitive on defense, which is really great to see. I think he might have a better defensive projection at the next level than Milton even. And both these guys are going to struggle to get to the rim and finish there in the NBA level. Obviously, both pretty skinny dudes, so I'm not projecting either to be these high level creators or breakdown guys, but just as like a combo guard who's more in a shooter role, who's going to give you, nice minutes on defense and make the right read, either of those guys can do that. It's really down to personal preference between those two. I just think that Shamet's off movement shooting is going to be a little bit more valuable compared to Milton's size advantage. So, it's really pick your poison between those two, though.
Yeah, that's true. Those two are, very interesting how they stack up against each other. I think Milton's he obviously has had to make up for that lack of athleticism. He has a great size and has been a proficient shooter throughout his time at SMU, but the lack of athleticism, I think, was certainly cause questions for people, as you look at how great we have, some really solid combo guards as we get further down the draft. But I still think that he's going to be a guy that can contribute on offense and has a track record of being an elite outside shooter. We obviously know Shamet also has the same profile. So it'll be interesting to see how those two stack up against each other. And now moving on, are one of the most interesting players, in terms of his draft stock going up and down, has been Bruce Brown. We've seen him fluctuate. We at the beginning of the year, we anticipated him being a top tier guy, doing some great things with Lonnie Walker, but he certainly dipped in recent years. Have you kind of cooled off or settled between your takes between Bruce Brown? How has he shifted in your eyes in the past few weeks? Are you more higher on him than you were in previous weeks or lower?
Well, I've kind of trended up on him a little bit after he got injured, and he had a couple just really bad weeks leading up to that injury. I just kind of had written him off almost at that point. I was just going to stick him mid to late second round and be done with it. But then I went back over my notes and looked at him again, and I was really impressed with some of the progress he showed early in the season. Even if he obviously faced his struggles before getting injured, he had a lot of things that went really well for him early on. Obviously, really athletic, great physical profile for a combo guard. You know, you can project him defending one through three at the NBA level. All that is really good to see. But offensively, you know, he made some strides as a handler and passer this year. I was glad to see that. His jump shot, obviously, is still a huge problem. He can't shoot off the dribble at all. So that's going to be a big adjustment for him doing that at the NBA level. But I'm just confident in his athleticism and his, you know, motor translating. I think if he's a solid enough passer and handler, he's going to be somewhat of a player. I think he needs to work on that jump shot for sure, but I don't think it's as bad as his percentages this season might indicate. I have him somewhere in the early second round. I just think that, you know, he's obviously on the older side for a sophomore, but his combination of athleticism and physical profile, in conjunction with some of the skills he has, is going to be pretty valuable.
Yeah, well, looking at how much that team changed between when he was healthy, you know, they got on a roll and had ranked up, you know, in the top 25 versus when he was injured. He certainly took a dip when Lonnie Walker had to really step up in that aspect. So you got to see how much he impacts that team. And I think he is one of the most versatile combo guards defensively in this class, you know, a guy that certainly contributed to a very good Miami defense. But I think looking forward, you have to understand that if he's going to work on the ball, that's going to be something that he certainly needs to work on. Being able to handle the ball more and shoot off the dribble, as you're talking about, are two huge, you know, indicators of how he's going to succeed. But it's hard to see, you know, how he fits if he's able to play the two but can guard multiple positions, or if you're able to actually trust him with the ball in his hand. So that'll certainly be something interesting. And you know, the rest of the guys, the combo guards, just have interesting things. You know, we've talked about a lot of them. One guy that we really haven't touched on very much because, well, he hasn't at all played college basketball is Anthony Simons. You know, you hear of a highly touted high school recruit coming out early. What do you see as Anthony Simons' upside? Right, he has time to develop. How do you see him projecting? You know, he certainly needs to get stronger and add things, but what do you see him coming to fruition as? What's his projectable mold in the NBA?
I think if everything goes right to him, right for him, you're looking at a guy who's in a mold similar to a guy like Malik Monk. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. I don't see the ceiling very high. I see, like, at his best, he's this sixth man scorer type who's a shooter and an athlete, but I'm not buying his jump shot all that much. From what I've seen, it's kind of a weird shot that's not very conducive to off of a shooting. If I remember correctly, it's just kind of slow. And he's just not a very efficient player. You know, he's not really a passer. He doesn't create for others all that well. He can get to the rim and finish up there. Obviously, had one of the best vertical leaps at the combine, and he's just really skinny though. Like, that's going to be a huge thing for him. He's not going to be physically ready to play in the NBA with his frame. And defensively, you know, I don't. He's probably like a two position defender maybe, but obviously still really skinny. Doesn't really have elite size or length. I believe like 6'4" with a 6'7" wingspan, if I remember correctly for him. So he's fine. I think he has some limited upside as like a sixth man type of guy, like I said, but just not a whole lot going for him. Okay, 6'3" and a quarter with a 6'9" and a quarter wingspan. So yeah, that's like a 1-2 defender. Not really a guy who's gonna guard threes, especially with his frame. Yeah, I mean, I just don't ever see him becoming like a lead guard type. He just hasn't even come close to flashing either the handling or passing necessary for that. So, you know, he could be like a solid sixth man type. And you got to take at least some. You got to take these young guys with pedigree and athleticism with at least some sort of, you know, you put a grain of salt with those guys because they do oftentimes end up turning into valuable players, but I just don't see even that much ceiling for a player in his archetype. If he turns into a nice sixth man player, that's probably good value for like a mid to late second round pick, but I don't want him in the first round, especially with some of the other guys in this class. So, you got any other thing else on these combos before we move to the wings?
Not particularly. You know, Simons certainly is the most interesting of the body of this grouping, but you know, he'll be interesting. He's certainly a guy that you can mold, and looking at how he projects, you know, he would certainly be a good asset as a microwave scorer off the bench, but you know, it's hard to project him in a starting lineup, so that'll be interesting. You know, the rest of these guys we all know and you know have seen enough about them. And now moving on to the wings, we have Miles Bridges number one, Zaire Smith number two, Kevin Herter number three, Mikal Bridges number four, Josh Okogie number five, Choi Brown, Lonnie Walker, Jacob Evans, Dazonin Musa, and Raleigh Alkins rounding out the list. Now, with the change, we've had some flip-flops between the two Bridges. What has your emergence on Miles Bridges been in the past few weeks, right? We know that he's been good throughout his 2 years at Michigan State, but it seems like people were trending down on him during the season, and now his stock has jumped up and possibly the number one wing in this class. What is the biggest thing that you saw, or, you know, what changed your opinion about Miles in recent weeks?
Well, his stock may be jumping up with me, but not with NBA teams. It sounds like he might not even go in the lottery, which I find crazy. But what I value with Miles is just he does everything. You know, he obviously has some lackadaisical instincts off the ball on defense, but that's really the only flaw. This is a guy who proved his off-movement shooting capability this past season, shooting off the dribble. One of the most prolific volume shooters in this class from three last year, and hit, you know, solid percentages and really high percentage from the free throw line. His form looks good. This is a guy who's going to shoot, which when you consider his physical and athletic profile, just to get, having any guy like that who can shoot is really valuable. 6'6", I think 6'6 and a quarter maybe, in shoes at the combine, plus a wingspan that was measured out higher than it previously. 6'6 and three quarters with a 6'9 and a half wingspan. Those numbers are both higher than previously reported. So obviously got great size for playing really 2 through 4 with his frame. Really low body fat percentage too. He's getting in the best shape of his life. Hopefully he can stay in that shape. And just going back over his film, what I saw from him is I was just really impressed with the growth he made as a dribbler and a passer this past season. Obviously had to play on the perimeter a lot more with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Nick Ward manning the front court for them, but he really got a lot better in those regards, especially making advanced reads on the move. That was really impressive to see. And defensively, he's going to be switchable with that frame and length. Obviously, you can downsize him to the 4 and maybe even the 5 in some playoff settings, depending on who the other team's center is. And, you know, he's going to defend point guards. I think he's got solid feet. Not necessarily defend point guards all the time, but at least on switches, he can definitely, you know, hold his own in those scenarios. And I think the off-ball defense can improve. I think it's less of a reaction time type of thing, because I do think he reacts quickly on offense. You see that in some of the snap decisions he makes passing on the move. I think it's more just of a focus thing. And knowing the type of kid he is, the intel around him, there's a lot of really great stuff about him. So if he's willing to put in the work, I think he can really improve that off-ball defense and become a guy who reacts a lot more quickly. It's just going to be a focus thing from him. And I just see the success of young wings who can dribble, pass, and shoot with athletic profiles and, you know, switchable defensive ability that have succeeded so much early on. You look at guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for the Celtics, obviously. I mean, that's the mold I see Miles Bridges, and I see him being one of those guys the moment he steps into the league. I don't know that there's a ultimately super high ceiling from him, just because I don't know that he has like star creator upside, but this is a guy who I think could be like the second best or third best player on a title team with the complementary skill set he's going to provide. He just does everything. Like, I don't see really any large flaws in his game.
Yeah, well, looking back at his play at Michigan State in his 2 years, I've been, you know, in the past few weeks realizing how few complaints or, you know, or questions I had about his game. He certainly improved as an offensive player, becoming more versatile. In his first year, he relied really heavily on his athleticism and was able to play within the arc a lot more. And now this year, he's shown that he can shoot on the move and has worked really well with the ball in his hand. So he's certainly grown on offense. And on defense, he contributed to a very good Michigan State defense and is certainly able to guard multiple positions. So he projects as a two-way contributor. And, you know, looking at the wings in this class, you want them to be two guys that can play both sides of the court and can create their own shot. And that exactly fits, you know, the Miles Bridges mold. So I think that he'll certainly be a big contributor at the next level, you know, a guy that has all the tools to be amongst the elite wings in the NBA. Now, we to get to possibly the most important question, the group, you know, we know Zaire, we know Kevin Herter. Mikal Bridges at number 4 is pretty surprising. What's been the dip? You know, we obviously know that you did a piece on Mikal. What's been the biggest dip in his stock in recent weeks? You know, in previous months, we've been talking about him as a top 6 guy. What has dropped him down 3 spots to being the 4th best wing in this class?
Well, I mean, I still have him really high in this class. This class has just got a really strong wing group. Like, Raleigh Alkins, the number 10 wing in this group that we're discussing, right? He's number 30 on my board. So there are a lot of really strong wings in this class. All 10 of these dudes, I think. I have as first round level prospects. Mikal Bridges still number 13 for me on my board, so it's not like I'm dropping him a whole ton. I just think that there's some limited upside with him compared to some of these other dudes. He just doesn't really have the dribbling or passing ability that I want from a guy in his mold. Obviously, really great shooter, going to be able to shoot over the top of guys, come off movement. I have basically no doubts about his shooting projection to the NBA level. And then defensively, his instincts and length are great. But I think that there's a real chance that he just doesn't, he's not really a plus defender on ball against anybody because his feet are not very good. He's just not the most coordinated guy, I think, would it be. He's got some high hips, and I think that that is a bit of an issue for him. Just kind of gangly, doesn't really seem all that fluid, and he's just really weak. He just doesn't have a naturally strong frame. He really gets bullied in the post, and he might have really maxed out his body, honestly, with the growth he's made just over his time at Villanova. I mean, he came there, you know, super skinny. He's just not a naturally thick guy, so I don't know how much switchability he has onto bigger players. You know, people compare him to Robert Covington. Robert Covington's huge. You know, he can body just about anyone at the NBA level. There's such a huge frame difference between those two on the defensive end that it's really hard to go there. But Bridges, I think, has a chance, you know, defensive twos and threes. He might be too weak for threes. And so I think the two might be the best position for him in the NBA, where obviously that length's going to give him some recovery opportunities and he'll be able to shoot over the top of guys. But he just is pretty limited as a passer and creator for that position. And, you know, if for some reason the shot doesn't translate as well as expected, you know, you're looking at a guy who might be just like a fringe rotation player. So I think there is a little bit of downside with him, but I do buy the upside of him as like a starting caliber 3-and-D wing, which is really valuable in today's NBA. So I like him. I think the comp that I've made for him that I think is like a reasonable upside comp is Robert Covington offense with Otto Porter defense, which, you know, that's not Robert Covington or Otto Porter as some people will compare him to, but if he can be, you know, the Robert Covington offense with Otto Porter defense, that's like a top 10 or 15 starting level wing in the league. So that's a solid player for him to become. If that's his upside, I like that. So again, I just, some of these other guys, you know, Miles Bridges, obviously the all-around game that I really like from him. Zaire Smith, I think, has maybe the most upside of any wing in this class, given his athleticism and IQ. Just, it's going to come down to skill development for him, especially at his size. He's measured out a lot smaller than expected at the combine. Kevin Huerter, I trust his dribbling and passing a lot more than Mikal Bridges. I think he's got better feet too. You know, obviously Mikal has more length, and I think he's a smarter player off the ball on defense, but Herter's offensive advantages might put him, he just put him slightly ahead of Mikal for me, especially because he's 2 years younger. So all those guys, I really like all those dudes, and Mikal Bridges is a really solid prospect. I just think that there are some other really talented wings in this class that deserve to go first.
Yeah, well, I think at this point we know what McCall is. He was a huge contributor for that Villanova squad, but looking at his, how he projects, we know that he's going to be a guy that shoots off the catch and dribble really well and is able to move without the ball. You know, he's not a otherworldly offensive player in terms of his self-creation, but he works really well with another point guard and other guys that can move the ball well. And on offense, he certainly has good length to make things happen within the arc, but we know that, you know, he's going to be a guy that relies on other people to move the ball and keep that energy going. And on defense, you know, he has the good instincts, but, you know, he's obviously limited in terms of he's not going to get much stronger and, you know, how you project him. So I think that he's a guy that is going to be a contributor and it certainly has a great skill set, but, you know, how much is he going to grow and improve with the other guys in this class, which has certainly have a high ceiling. Now, moving on with the other guy that you were just talking about, you know, just a quick question is, with Kevin Huerter, right, the biggest thing we're banking on is, as we've seen at his time at Maryland, that he can be an elite shooter, right, for that wing position, that he's been able to certainly improve his outside shooting. Do you trust that outside shooting as much as other people do in terms of valuing his draft stock? We've seen him improve as a three-point shooter. You know, his percentages have gone up, but his free throw percentage still lying around 75%. Do you trust him as an offensive lead wing in for your team as a guy that can shoot on the outside? And how is he going to grow as a shooter and as an offensive player?
Well, yeah, I think the free throw percentage is a concern, but I think a lot of the times the reason you rely on free throw percentage to, you know, find these shooters is that, you know, it stabilizes more quickly than 3-point percentage, right? So it's usually a better indicator of shooting ability. But the case with Huerter, I mean, he's a guy who has more 3-point attempts over the course of his career in college than free throw attempts, which isn't the case for a lot of guys. And he's a guy who shot 39, almost 40% on 350 3-point attempts 75% on 125 free throw attempts. So almost three times as many three-point attempts. So, you know, you use that free throw percentage to stabilize. Obviously, that drags it down a little bit. But that three-point sample is pretty solid. And when you just look at him mechanically and the consistency with which he operates, I mean, even being able to shoot off movement a lot and off backward momentum especially, that's something I've really noticed when watching him. I just don't have a lot of questions about the jump shot. I get the free throw percentage concerns, but I think that the jumper is just going to translate. You know, there have been guys in recent years who've translated even with poor free throw percentages. Obviously, you'd like it better if he was an 85-88% free throw shooter, and I don't know why he's not, honestly, as good of a shooter as he is, but this is a guy who's always been touted for being a shooter coming out of high school. That's what he was, and obviously, he added more to his game over his time at Maryland, but I don't really doubt the shooting ability. I think it's going to translate just fine for him.
Yeah, he's certainly a guy that has improved at his 2 years at Maryland, and a guy that I think there's a large enough sample size to be able to see him project as an elite shooter at the next level. So he's not a guy that I have a lot of questions about. It's just, you know, that free throw percentage will certainly be something to watch in the coming years. Now, moving on with the, you know, a lot of the solid wings in this class, two that are really interesting in terms of me is what we have Zion and Musa all the way down the list below Lonnie Walker and Jacob Evans. What's been the biggest drop off for you in terms of Musa's stock, right? Coming into this year, at least I was really high on him just because of his size and offensive potential. What sets him below your Troy Browns, your Lonnie Walkers, your Jacob Evans in terms of his wing versatility and how much he can contribute?
He's just a guy who defensively is far behind a lot of these other dudes. Obviously has a really nice size, but with the way he hunches over, it's not very functional. And his IQ off the ball is really, really bad. Like, he has some serious problems just in terms of paying attention and staying locked in. Completely loses track of his man a lot of the time. He'll have moments where he locks in and he's pretty effective, but it's hard to place a lot of stock in a guy who's had that many issues. I value his offensive game. Obviously, the handling at size is really impressive, and he can shoot off the dribble. He's pretty quick, long strides to the rim, all that. But I don't know how well he fits in a team context. He's always been known as kind of a score-first player, so I see the ceiling and the talent for him. I don't know that he has the right mentality. There's not great intel on him as a teammate. He's a guy who, you know, idolizes Kobe Bryant, as far as I know. And so he's not really the guy who's going to fit as your perfect role player, glue guy type. Maybe he can be a really high-level sixth man at the next level, and I think he definitely has the talent to do that. Bojan Bogdanovic is kind of a comparison I'd like to make for him, just as like a scorer guy who's probably not going to give you a whole lot on defense. Musa, I think, could be a rotation level player, maybe even like a high level sixth man, and, you know, turn into a starter if he figures things out the right way. It's just there are some other guys who are further ahead on defense and who, you know, can bring some similar offensive skill sets, maybe not the same level of self creation that Musa brings, but, you know, I don't think there's that much of a difference to really put Musa ahead of a lot of these guys, even though he might be a little bit more talented than a Jacob Evans or even a Lonnie Walker.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, with Musa, you're obviously banking on his offensive upside. I think that in terms of his scoring instincts, you know, he's amongst the elite wings in this class. He certainly has gifts on that end that I don't think a lot of these guys are able to, you know, develop just because that's an innate skill. But on defense, you know, you obviously question his contributions despite, you know, being a oversized wing, which is still a valuable position on defense. But, you know, he's a guy that I think will certainly have to figure some more things out to be able to contribute as a starting wing. But off the bench, he would be a great player, you know, certainly a guy that would bring a lot of energy in terms of his scoring. Now, moving on to the forwards, you know, we answered a lot of the questions that I had from the wing section. The forwards section, one of the most interesting in this class. We have it starting off the list with one, Luka Doncic, of course. Number two, Michael Porter Jr. Number three, Kevin Knox. Number four, Kenrich Williams. Number five, Kata Bates-Diop, Jared Vanderbilt, Vince Edwards, Gary Clark, and Kevin Hervey. Now,
and
we
don't forget Xavier Cooks, number 10, my guy.
Oh, yeah, excuse me, yeah. Missed that one, but now, moving on, looking at the forward class, we obviously know Doncic, you know, he's our favorite, you know, he's the number consensus number one pick for us, at least. And looking at the number two option with Michael Porter Jr., how do you, you know, I saw you tweet a few weeks ago that Michael Porter Jr. may fit the mold of possibly one of the more, you know, one-sided players in this draft, a guy that's going to contribute on offense but not do as well on defense. How do you see him fitting in amongst the elite forwards in this class? Do you value that offensive output, you know, what he was able to do in high school as much as, you know, the other guys in this class? And how is he going to be able to be an efficient offensive player at the next level?
Yeah, with Porter Jr., it's all about reconciling the elite production and tools with all the red flags, from the teammate stuff that's leaked out, from the injuries. He can't even get out of bed now. All the play style issues, the ball stopping, all those sorts of things. And then you have a guy who is insanely productive in AAU play. A guy who's insanely productive in high school, has won at every level he's played outside, of course, Mizzou. How do you weigh a guy with such polarized, you know, strengths and such polarized red flags? But where I'm going to put him, I have him relatively high on my board. I think I finished with him at number 10. Obviously, that's lower than some people, but I can't go all in on him compared to some of these other guys in this class who just don't have as many red flags. But the production is really, really valuable. Like, this is a guy who's going to handle and create his own shot at 6'11 now. I think he measured out the combine, and a 9-foot standing reach. So he's got almost center size, which is ridiculous for his skill set. 6'10 and 3/4, 7 foot and a quarter wingspan, 9 foot and a half inch standing reach. That's a guy who's got the size of a center. And the way he plays, you know, he's got the skill set of a lot of wings in terms of his dribbling and shot creation ability. If he can figure out, you know, how to channel it into being a more efficient player, this is a guy who's going to be massively good, as long as, of course, the injuries go away and everything. Again, you have to jump through some hoops in terms of injuries to really get into projecting him, but the talent there is so, so valuable that I don't think you can drop him really anywhere outside the top 10, in my opinion. That's like his floor in terms of ranking, in my mind. Defensively, he has a lot of issues, you know, can't move his feet very well, horrible in terms of focus and instincts and rotating over, all that sort of stuff, just a ball watcher in every sense of the word. But, you know, he flashed some solid ability to at least contain guards in that Florida State game. If he's playing the four, I think he should be all right at the next level. He's not going to be this horrible minus defender. You know, he could be, but I think he has the ability to not, especially with the reach that he has, that's going to help him be an effective weak side rim protector, all those sorts of things, if he wants to. So the talent level with him is just so high that you can't ignore it, but I think there are a lot of flags you have to consider when you're ranking him.
Well, that's very true. With Michael Porter Jr., you know, injury questions aside, we know that harpered him throughout his first year in college. But just looking at his skill set, you know, he's a guy that's incredibly talented on offense, can make pretty much any shot that he wants when he has the ball in his hands. But I think that the biggest thing will be how a team utilizes his skill set, right? If they're able to put defensive guys around him that can contribute and are able to complement his offensive skill set well, I think that he's going to really maximize that offensive, that power that he has. But if he's put in a role where he's just chucking up shots, you know, where they're just asking him to create the entire offense for the team, I think that he's going to suffer from being less efficient than you want to, as we saw with the two games that he played in his college career, you know, at Georgia. We obviously know that he was dealing with an injury, but still you wonder about, you know, if he's able to have the self-awareness to take smart shots and be able to not force up things when he's not being able to convert them at efficient rate. So those are the only questions I have about him. But on defense, you know, he's going to be a guy that has great length, but well, obviously doesn't have the IQ up to par at this point. But offense, he is a guy that will be a really dynamic player at the next level. And moving on with the forwards, we have the other guy that I'm interested in talking about is Kaita Bates-Diop. For Ohio State, we, during the season, a lot of people started jumping on the Kaita Bates-Diop bandwagon as a guy that, you know, is a great two-way contributor. How do you think Kaita Bates-Diop is going to fit in at the next level, right? Does he have a high enough floor to be able to use a valuable draft pick on as a guy that, you know, we've seen what he is at Ohio State? What is his projectable role at the next level?
I'm glad you brought up Kaita Bates-Diop, because he's a guy who has gotten almost no love from anyone talking about him. He's just been completely overlooked, I think. And this is a guy who's a bona fide first-round prospect, in my mind. Great size for a combo forward type. Measured out, I think, with like a 7'3 and a half wingspan, something like that. Let me get the exact numbers on him. But he's got super impressive physical profile, 6'8 and a half, 7'3 and a quarter wingspan, 8 foot, 10 and a half standing reach. 224 pounds. So this is a guy who's going to be, you know, able to play, defend NBA players from day one. Obviously not the most quick twitch guy, doesn't have, you know, the best in terms of instincts, but he's really long. He can cover ground pretty quickly, and I think he's got some underrated pop when he has time to load up. And then offensively, obviously not the most versatile guy, but can really shoot over the top really well. Is a guy who's going to be a great pick-and-pop threat in the NBA as a four type, be a floor spacer for sure. Can do a little bit off the dribble, not a whole lot, not very fluid there, not much of a passer, but he was really productive at Ohio State, was really like their offensive centerpiece. So if he can develop his handle a little bit, this is a guy who's going to have a really valuable two-way skill set. He contributes so much on both ends. Probably not ever a starter-level player, but this is a guy who's going to be a really solid third forward for some team who can grab him in the late first. Just gives you a lot of what you want in terms of like a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, I cannot wait till he is a Timberwolf. He is the most Tom Thibodeau player that I could ever imagine. You know, certainly a guy that would reinforce their defense. And on offense, I think that if you're able to put him against, along with guys that they can create their own shot and look to get him the ball, I think that he can certainly contribute in his own right. You know, he's not the most dynamic offensive player, but he can certainly contribute on that end. Now, looking at the other guys on this list, Jared Vanderbilt is another guy that we have been, you know, going back and forth on. With Vanderbilt's, you know, limited playing time, what did you see during his, you know, very few games at Kentucky that most stood out for you? What do you think is going to be his biggest skill going into the NBA as possibly, you know, a forward that has a lot of demand on and requires a big workload?
I mean, it's just quick decision making for me. He might even be more of a big man than a forward, honestly, with his role at the NBA level. I mean, if he's just not going to shoot at all, which I think is kind of what you have to project with him, he's probably just like a straight five, maybe even four a little bit. But this is a guy who's just going to be a short role playmaker who motors the hell out of himself on defense, obviously kills the glass, moves his feet a little bit on the perimeter, just this like switchy small ball five. Maybe like a Jordan Bell type of mold would be the way for him to really add value. Obviously has huge injury questions. And, you know, didn't develop that shot basically at all. But he can handle the ball in grab-and-go settings. He's just really coordinated and athletic for his size, 6'9", with a 7'1 wingspan, I think. So there's a lot of positives with Vanderbilt. Obviously, there are some huge weaknesses as well. But he's a guy who you have to consider the upside with him, especially as, like, a small ball five in a league where those guys can be really valuable. You got anything else on these other forwards before we move on?
Yeah, well, the last question I had was with Gary Clark, you know, a guy that impressed me a lot during his time at Cincinnati. We know about, you know, his defense and what he was able to do for that Cincinnati squad. What is the, you know, biggest question mark that you have about him? Is it his size or is it, you know, what he's able to contribute on offense? Because he's certainly going to be an interesting wing for me in this class. What's the biggest thing that you see about his game that maybe you question or you don't, you know, quite see that's going to translate as well?
I just don't know what he ends up being on offense. I'm confident in the growth that he's made as a jump shooter. That's promising to see, but I don't know that he's ever going to be a good enough guy who's really a threat. Maybe he can be like a PJ Tucker type from the corners. That's kind of the archetype for him to succeed. He's just also a guy who flashed a little bit of off the dribble ability for Cincinnati this season, but most of it was pretty ugly when he tried to do that. Can score out of the post a little bit, has really good lower body strength, knows how to get lower than guys and really get into their body and finish. But I don't know, obviously that's not really like a way that four men score in the NBA today. So I don't really know what he does on offense. Obviously a good passer and decision maker, that's going to be really valuable. But I don't see the mold for him to really contribute on offense unless he really improves the jump shot. So that's the one thing that's kind of holding me back from loving him a little bit more. Obviously the defense is going to be great, super high IQ. Switchable guy, doesn't have the greatest feet in the world, but is strong, competes, and has made an impact on that end all 4 years at Cincinnati. So that's great to see. He's an interesting projection question because I'm not really sure what his niche in the NBA is going to be if that jumper doesn't really work out.
Yeah, that's true. The biggest question will be, you know, how a team utilizes an offense. We know that he's going to be a plus defender. He tries really hard and makes really smart reads on that end, which is part of why I like him so much. He's a guy that doesn't fully rely on just his physical profile to make an impact on defense. He's still a very smart player on offense. I think, you know, he's certainly grown in the past year, but there's certainly questions on how a team can utilize him. You know, he's going to be an outside threat, but not as dynamic enough to really be able to shore up that forward spot. So he'll be an interesting fit and somebody that will be a player that I think that can maximize with the right coach and system. Now, moving on to our last section is the bigs, the highlight of this class. We have number one, Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J, coming up at number one. Number two, Wendell Carter Jr. Number three, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley III, Mohamed Bamba, Robert Williams, Mitchell Robinson, Omari Spellman, Wagner, of course, and then Raymond Spalding rounding out the list. And with the bigs in this class, you know, we obviously know that's the highlight of this class. With all these guys being great, the biggest question mark that I see, or the biggest wild card that I see, is, I'm going to skip the top guys for a minute. Where do you think Mitchell Robinson will be able to fall into this class? Do you see him being able to overcome the attitude or, you know, character questions because he's so talented? Or how do you think he's going to fall in this class because it's such a talented draft? And he's a great talent, but certainly has questions off of the court.
If I had to place, like, odds on him ever becoming an NBA contributor, I'd probably go somewhere like 30 to 40%, just because I think that the off-court questions are that significant. I really buy the talent. Again, I've said it many times, I think he's a top 12 talent in this class, but the off-court questions are really significant. We've hit on this before. He's just not a guy who I trust in terms of his love for the game at all or how he feels about basketball. I just, again, I'm not buying him as a prospect just because of all the significant questions about his commitment to the game, his character. There's not a whole lot of interest for me. If I was a team, I would not want to be hitching my wagon to that guy.
Well, that's true. I mean, just looking at his high school tape, you know, he was amongst the best defenders in the nation, and it was sad to see that all these questions arise from his time, you know, not going to Western Kentucky. But he's a guy that I think if you're able to, you know, get him in line and say, hey, you know, we're going to rein him in and make sure that he's focused, he can be a good contributor, but that requires a lot of effort and the right system to fit him. Now moving back up the list, the number two guy that we have, very interesting. A lot of people wouldn't put him above DeAndre Ayton. Wendell Carter Jr., I guess the biggest question with Wendell Carter Jr. is his mobility, right? He doesn't have the massive physical profile that DeAndre Ayton has. How do you think he's going to be able to contribute on defense in terms of his mobility, and if he's able to be the elite defender that a lot of the other big men in this class can become?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this on the Stepien last week, looking at a lot of his tape as a perimeter defender, and I think his feet are actually pretty good when he's in the right stance. When he bends his knees and plays on his toes, he had this really bad habit of playing on his heels, and he would just get burned really bad when he would do that. But I don't think it's necessarily a, you know, really big issue for him in terms of ability. He's not the best at changing directions north-south, but I think that's something that can improve as he gets in better shape and works on his hips. I think that's less of a natural athleticism thing and more something that can be trained in terms of that north-south change direction ability. But yeah, I think he's got pretty fluid feet on the perimeter. I mean, he's stuck with a lot of guys and done a really good job of containing guards. Obviously he's no Clint Capella or anything, but he's not going to, like, there are people who think that he's not even going to be able to play in the playoffs because he's just going to get played off the court because he's not quick enough. And I'm sorry, but if that's what you see, I mean, you just haven't really paid that close of attention when watching him, and you're overvaluing a lot of the trends of the current NBA. This is a guy who can capably move his feet. I mean, I did a film comparison of him and Al Horford in that piece, and those two guys are basically the same in terms of how close quickly they move their feet when they're playing the right way, at least to my eye. Horford's a guy who's also, you know, considerably smaller than Carter in terms of dimensions. Carter's longer, has a bigger standing reach, also weighs more. So if he combines that package, he could be a really good defensive player. I don't think he's got, obviously, the upside of a Jaren Jackson Jr. or Mohamed Bamba. And, you know, if DeAndre Ayton really figures things out, he might even find a way to be a better defender than Carter. But I would bet on Carter first just because I think he's a lot smarter. He really uses his length functionally as a rim protector, plays bigger than his size even, I think. Just cleaned up a ton of defensive issues for Duke this past season. I mean, there were so many times when I was reviewing his film that he was putting really tough situations because of complete defensive breakdowns from the guards, and he did a pretty good job of kind of patching things up even in tough moments. So I really like a lot about what he does on defense. Obviously, the offensive upside is where I really get into him. I think he has maybe the most or second most offensive upside of any big man in this class, depending on how you feel about Marvin Bagley. I really like Bagley's offensive upside, but he might not be a true five, which is certainly going to limit him if he has to play the four. So it'll be interesting to see which of those two becomes the better offensive player. But I really love Carter's face-up game. He's super coordinated as a dribbler. Really nice shooting mechanics as well. Can score out of the post, finish at the rim. There's not a whole lot he can't do. So I think his two-way upside is just considerable. I really like his game.
Yeah, he'll be an exciting player. And with that Duke system, I don't think that we are able to maximize the Wendell Carter Jr. experience on offense. I certainly think that he has a lot more upside looking at how much he can stretch the floor and work inside. He has the length and quickness to really contribute in both of those aspects. So he's going to be an exciting guy to see how him and Bagley, you know, transform throughout the years. Now, looking at another big man in this class, Mohamed Bamba, right? We see the shooting videos, you know, he's hitting 9 threes in a row. He's shooting a million of them every day. That's great and all, and that's certainly something that we love to see. But what is the other biggest thing on offense that you think that he needs to improve? What else will be the biggest indicator of his success, and what's the thing that he needs to work on the most outside of shooting, of course?
I think it's going to be the lower body strength and the core strength to be able to handle contact as a roller. You know, I think that there's some issues where, you know, if he's diving to the rim hard, guys are going to be able to get into his legs and just slow him down. He just can't handle contact that well at this point just because he's just got a generally kind of weak frame. I think there's a chance he can develop that for sure, but that lower body strength is really a big inhibitor for him on both ends of the floor. You see some pretty untalented big men able to get into his body and post him up deep, so I really want to see him improve that. It'll help him a lot on offense, I think, and he didn't really show anything as a passer at Texas last year. He's flashed it sometimes in high school, but again, he's never been known as like this offensive fulcrum type of guy or anything, but if he can improve his passing to where he can be a guy who can make reads pretty quickly, doesn't necessarily have to be a guy who's like a Wendell Carter Jr., Al Horford, anything, obviously, but he's got some considerable ability there, I think. He's got some pretty crafty passing ability that he's flashed, a little bit of stuff on the move. But with as smart as he is off the court, you want to see that translate to IQ on offense a lot more, and he just hasn't shown that. Obviously, the jump shot comes around, that'll solve a lot of his issues, but I'm not super convinced in that. So it'll be really interesting to see what kind of offensive player he is. I'm not convinced, and I think he has some downside on that end, but the shot videos are certainly encouraging.
Yeah, that'll be a big question and, you know, thing that we look at years later from this draft, how much Mohamed Bamba was able to grow and evolve on offense, which will be great to see. Now, another interesting guy that right below Bamba is Robert Williams, right? We saw him have some difficulty in his second year at Texas A&M. Still a very good defender, but offensively, I have quite a few questions for him. Do you think he's going to be able to become the, you know, a two-way contributors that a lot of the elite big men in this class are going to become? How do you see his offense projecting it with, you know, the strength of his defense? Do you think he's going to be able to refine his skills enough to be a contributor on that end as well?
I mean, he's going to have to become a better free throw shooter for starters. So you don't want him to be a guy who's going to be getting hacked, because that's a huge inhibitor. And if teams can just send him to the free throw line, that's going to take away a lot of the advantages that he's going to give you. But he's got his really athletic, going to be that dive man threat for sure. He might need to add a little bit of strength. I am a bit concerned with his girth. I think he can get pushed around a little bit on the inside. Not a jump shooter either, just hasn't been successful at that over 2 years at Texas A&M. But I think he does have some untapped upside. Here's a guy who was used, I believe the stat is, he had almost twice as many spot ups as rolls to the rim over the course of his 2 years at Texas A&M, and that's kind of just unacceptable. You know, with his skill set, this is a guy who should be diving to the rim all the time. Obviously, college teams don't play a ton of pick and roll, especially considering Williams was playing the four next to Tyler Davis. But at the same time, I really want to see him used in that role. I think he could be useful there. But then again, the thing with that is that's kind of a replaceable role. There are plenty of guys who are, you know, 6'10", 6'11", who are athletic and can go catch dunks. It's a matter of what he can add besides that. And I think the short roll playmaking that people bring up a lot, there is some potential for him there. He did improve at that this year, but he still makes a lot of boneheaded turnovers when trying to make the right pass. I think he has some issues with that. So it's going to come down to like how well he locks in and how much his motor is running, because that's always been the issue for him, is just consistently playing hard. There is some upside for him on offense. I don't think he's ever going to be a jump shooter, but if he can make the right pass and be a dive man, that's going to be a useful player. There are just some other big men I like better in this class. I would probably rank Williams higher based on pure talent, but I think positional value is a really big thing for him. And he potentially has a skill set that's pretty easy to replace. I buy his ability to move his feet on the perimeter and, you know, defend the rim, but I don't know how good his instincts and smarts really are. I think he just has a really inconsistent motor on defense, and, you know, he kind of struggled to impact the game. Obviously, blocked a ton of shots at the college level, but Texas A&M's defense wasn't considerably better with him on the floor versus him off, and that is kind of a concern for me because, like, this is a guy who was obviously touted for his defensive ability. Texas Tech was actually worse 6 points per 100 possessions with him on the floor than him off, so that, at least on the defensive end. So that's obviously a big question for him. Again, I don't know how well that translates to the NBA, but he's a guy who has a wide range of outcomes for me. I think you're looking at a guy who could potentially fill that Clint Capela mold. He's one of the best centers in the NBA, but he could also be a guy who's like Anthony Randolph and just kind of falls out of the NBA after a few years. So there's certainly some varied outcomes for him. It'll just depend on, I think, the way he can grow mentally and how well he can lock in all the time.
Yeah, he'll be a really interesting player in terms of how a coach can mold him on offense and what role he's going to be able to fill. We know that he had quite a lot of problems with his, you know, his consistency shooting the ball, a very poor efficiency there. So if you're able to get him with a really good point guard, a guy that can get the ball and move with, be able to maximize that athleticism, I think that he's going to be certainly a more valuable contributor than without one. So he'll be an interesting player and certainly brings great tools on defense. And that's the last question I had for the bigs. You know, a lot of these guys are great prospects. You know, we look at how valuable all of them are, and even Marvin Bagley being, you know, the ACC player of the year, being our fourth best big in this class, which will show how strong this class is. So it's exciting, good draft, and it was a really good positional rankings.
Yeah, man. And before we get off, I just want to say thank you again for being on all these episodes. I had a great time doing these with you, and yeah, I mean, we'll have you back sometime, I'm sure, next season, just to talk some of these guys that you're interested in. So if you ever want to come back on, just let me know, and, you know, we can come on and have you talk with whoever our new co-host is and me.
Yeah, man. Well, I'd just like to say to everybody listening, everybody supported the show, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, this is why we did this. You know, this is why we created this thing, to be able to help connect more people to the draft and provide more hot takes and whatnot. So it was great to be able to talk to all of you guys and be able to bring you my opinion. And I'm glad to see that the show is going to be doing more great things, and something that I created is going to go and flourish.
Yeah, for sure. We'll catch y'all next week after the draft with some post-draft reviews. I'm really excited to get into that with our new co-host. We'll keep secret who that's going to be up until then. But thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you, Cesar. And we'll see y'all next week after the draft. Have fun on Thursday night. Everyone enjoy it. And yeah, Luka Doncic should go number one. That's my hot take about the draft. And we'll see you later.